So as we are going through the Song of Solomon, we have looked at a couple of topics. We had our introduction, of course, and we talked about the uniqueness of this book and really the greatness of this book. Then we went into the attraction phase of a relationship, and everything goes through these phases. Every relationship goes through these phases, and so it goes from attraction to dating, which is what we covered last week. And this week we begin courtship, and we're going to be in chapter 2, verse 8. That's where we're going to begin, because we left off on verse 7. But you know, passion is something that is hard to control, and it requires that there be true love towards God and towards the woman or towards the man that you're dating or that you're in a relationship with. And we left off last week with this couple rapidly advancing, getting more physical. They were being more and more drawn to one another, and things were beginning to get, on that point where it needs to be stopped. And we watched this wonderful and very natural part of this relationship set up and establish boundaries. And it's good that we see that. It's good that we understand that there has to be an understanding that it's natural to have these passions and these desires. Even within a dating, non-marital situation, those desires are something that God has put in our DNA. That's how we're supposed to function. We're supposed to be driven towards one another. However, it has to have its proper boundaries. And when it follows, when it stays within these proper boundaries, God has a special blessing for us. And so as things got heated up last week, the man dealt very firmly and very lovingly with this woman that he was dating. And Solomon, the man, said, listen, we need to put a stop on things. That's where we ended in verse 7. And he says, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. And he was saying, listen, these things that you have, they're love. These are expressions of love. You want to be intimate with me. You want to be sexual. You want to take that next step. But there's going to be boundaries to this. And it's so important we'd understand this. It is the man who is leading. So important. We have such a failure in men leading. And that's not all on the man's shoulders, by the way. I talk enough about this. I think that women contribute to that. I think society and the media contribute to that. But that's another story for another time. So, church, I want you to know that this is not something that's impossible to do. It's possible to have these desires and yet still control them. But it's going to require a couple of things, at least a couple of things. First, it's going to have to require a greater love for pleasing the Lord than pleasing yourself and the one that you're dating or in a relationship with. And second, it's going to require some maturity. It also helps when both people in the relationship are agreed that the direction that the relationship needs to go in is in a godly way. Because you become accountable to one another. You make promises to one another. You have a commitment to the Lord, and that carries out and carries forth in the relationship. And so it's important that we'd understand these critical boundaries. Now listen, we hear so often that we should wait till we get married to have sex. And we talk about the message of purity rings, and those are great, great things to talk about. But I think that the church, for the most part, has failed to explain why. We say that, hey, you should have a purity ring. And then it becomes almost like a cool thing. Well, look, I got a purity ring. And we love those messages. We want our kids to take that stand. And if you're single, you want to take that stand of purity because it honors the Lord. That's a right move. There's nothing wrong with that. And you should wait till you get married. But why? It's because when these things go in the direction towards physical intimacy, towards sexual relations, and it's outside of the boundary that God has, damage will follow. Friday night, it was my birthday, and Monica took me out. We went camping. We've never done that before, so it was kind of an interesting sort of thing. I left a little bit early from work. I can't believe how excited I was. I try to be like real calm and everything. There's a real passionate person, but I try to be like real calm and cool, but I was so excited. And my Jeep, we put the twin mattress. I got it all ready. She went, dropped the kids off, got food. She went to Whataburger. We got these, oh my goodness, these double, this is not part of the story. I probably shouldn't talk about this, but double cheeseburgers. She got me, I ate way too much. We had goodies afterwards. But the best part of this, we did a little bit of fishing. And I love that. You guys know how passionate I am about fly fishing. But the best part was building this fire together. And so, if you don't know this, there's a couple of things that I do when I make a fire is I get lint. If you have a dryer, collect all that lint because that is highly flammable once it's lit. And it is a great tool, right? We know some people can start fires in very challenging situations. But this was a little bit challenging. You see, we were right at a point of this lake, and coming off of this ridge was a good wind. And so I had to make sure that everything was kind of kept. So there's so many principles about the fire. Such good things. Let me just tell you a couple. While I'm going to talk about this, I want to broaden a little bit. You have to have fuel for the fire. And you also have to have oxygen. If you don't have oxygen, the fire won't take off. So if you don't know this about a relationship, you want to make sure that there's not too close. Not that you can't be close together, but you have to have a relationship where there's space. You allow there to be some oxygen. And when you do it, it causes the flames to be even more powerful. So we've got this wind, the oxygen that's coming. We had all the fuel. We had the lint. We had leaves. We had twigs. There were like some pine tree sort of, you guys with me? Pine needles? Thank you very much. I need help every once in a while. And then I put some like little kindling. And I did it all in kind of a pointed upwards. And then I put bigger pieces of 2x4s, dried out wood that were on top of it. And I lit the fire. And then the wind came through and I thought, it's going to blow this out. So I kept trying to add little twigs in there to make sure the fire was going to continue. We had a great time. We executed our plans, and we kept it under the proper conditions and boundaries. And as it got hotter and hotter, the outside 2x4s got hot, and then they ended up falling down on themselves, and then there were embers, and we put more on top. And we stayed up till, we out in front of the fire till 11 o'clock, 4 hours. I didn't think it was going to last an hour the way that the wind was blowing through. And we talked for 4 hours, and it was dark outside and on a lake. We were literally like 5 feet from the lake. And we just talked. And it was great. My love for fire started when I was in second grade. I might be considered to be, at least at that age, a pyromaniac. I had some problems. I had some run-ins with fire, and it wasn't always a good thing. When I was in second grade, I was living in Stanton, California, and I wanted to start a fire, so I took a barbecue, right, a little outside little grill, and I brought it into the garage. Cover their ears, make sure they don't hear this. Thank you. And I made these coals, and I lit the coals on it, and they started going. And then I took lighter fluid, and every time I sprayed it, fire, and I'm like, this is awesome. This is so cool. And I just kept spraying it, and every time I sprayed more, the flames are going. I'm like, this is like power. This is awesome. And then one time I sprayed it, and I was a little too much over the fire, singed my hair. My second grade picture shows a little, it kind of looked, kind of like a surfer dude. It worked out for my advantage, I think. But I got in trouble for that. My parents rightly corrected me because I was lighting a fire and I shouldn't have been. Later on in the year, my parents separated and I went to go live down in Huntington Beach with my mom. And there is a playground there. I'm hoping that some of you guys can relate to this, that I'm not all alone up here on this. But there was a playground, and you know what they have on these playgrounds is they've got wood chips. And I thought, you know what would be really cool? I'm going to light this thing up. So one of my buddies and I, we went and got some fluid, and we kind of, you know, made some of the wood chips. And we thought, this would be a killer fire. So we tried lighting this up, and we threw the match out, and boom, we ran and looked back, nothing. So we went back, sprayed more fluid. Lit it up, ran, no fire. I am so thankful that that didn't take, because that would have been really, really, really bad. And, you know, I was a little boy. I didn't know that the equipment costs a lot of money, that it could have spread to people's houses. And church, listen, we need to be careful that we're not those kinds of kids when it comes to fire and passion and intimacy. We need to also be careful that we're not getting into relationships with these types of kids because they're detrimental. Tom Nelson, in his book and his series on the Song of Solomon, talks about the place that fires are supposed to go. It's called a fireplace. He says, you know, if there's something unique about fire, when you get a fire, you can just go in your living room and start the fire. And then it will definitely get you warm. You'll feel the beautiful picture and the smell of the wood and the warmth from the flames. But soon it's going to get out of control. And when it gets out of control, it moves to other parts of the house and it will only cause damage. And so the problem with lighting the fire where it's not supposed to be lit is that you lose control and it causes damage to other places. So we need to be careful of that. Now listen, the fire, if it's placed in the right place, in the right time, in the right context, then it will serve to be a blessing for you. Unfortunately, we live in a society that pushes the fire to be outside of the fireplace. And the kids are trained in the media, the movies, the TV, the music, magazines, that it's okay to take that fire and enjoy it in other places. But God has created this one unique place for this fire to have great blessing, and it's called marriage. In the home, it's the fireplace. For us as human beings, it's called marriage. And when it's kept in that place, it's safe and it's beneficial and it's joyous. Some of my best family times that I can remember over the last 5 or 6 years have been turning the TV off, going downstairs, turning all the lights off, and we get a fire going, and we just sit around and we talk. And I'm telling you, the laughter that we have, it goes from one topic to another, and there's no agenda. There's, you know, we don't have to follow these bullet points. It's just free, and it's open. And then we begin talking and laughing, and somebody will say something wrong, and we'll laugh at that, and it's such a great place. But the fire is in the right place, the fireplace. What's the difference? The wood's not different. The starter stick is not different. The fire's not different. The match is not different. The fire is not different, but it's the timing and the place. It's the context, church. God created the context for a healthy expression of sexuality, and this is the marital relationship. One man and one woman for life, and this is the fireplace that he's built for us. So why do we have the message of purity rings and don't have sex before your marriage, before you're married? It's because we understand that there's damage that can take place. Well, what can a fire bring as far as wrong effects? What bad things, what adverse effects will take place if there's a fire outside of the boundaries that God has established? One, communication. People in this world, listen, we get these movies and these people who are professional actors and professional performers, and they present premarital sex and adultery and all kinds of lewd acts of sexual nature. And they present it as though it's good and that it's great, and as long as you love people, and it's bad. And what it does is it tears down at communication. The relationship on the communication level begins to atrophy, and it will ruin the area. Two, the second thing that it will badly affect is it will cause an unhealthy illusion of health. Because it is exciting, because God did make a man and a woman to go together, and when they do come together in a sexual way, it feels good. That's the truth. But in the end, it's destruction. And so there's the deception of the strength of the relationship. And then the third one, closely tied to this, is that there's a law of diminishing return. Because what is exciting at this point won't be exciting tomorrow. There's always going to be a need to have something different. There's always going to be a need for more fire to maintain the facade of the relationship. So here's some hot topic issues on dating, and then we can move to courtship after this. One is extended guy-girl relationships. God has hardwired our chemistry so that a man and a woman are drawn to each other. And so at some point, when there's those relationships, when it's outside of marriage, then the people will have feelings for one another. Another thing is a long-term dating relationship. Everybody loves the ideas of a high school sweetheart, but in the long run, over 10 years' time, if that's how long the relationship is, it becomes more and more difficult to maintain these boundaries. Here's an equation for you, kind of like a math equation, but it's a relationship equation. Time plus communication equals intimacy. So the longer that a couple are together, the more they communicate, there's a greater likelihood for intimacy. Now listen, I'll toss these little things in. I don't think people should get married when they first meet each other. I think there should be a length of time. I think a minimum of a year. because you don't know the person. You need to get to know them. Now, if you've had a long-standing friendship, that certainly helps. But then there's a whole dating context to it. So I believe that it shouldn't be a very quick, though there have been some that have been blessed by God, I think that there should be a longer time that people date. For me and Monica, it was good because we worked through a lot of issues when we were dating. And so from my perspective, I think it's good. But if you go for too long, then it becomes harder and harder because you're spending time together, you're communicating, and you're driven towards that intimacy. Another thing to talk about dating is that there are people who are relationship addicts. They need to be content as being single. A good question to ask is, has there ever been a time that you've not been in a relationship? That's a good thing to ask, because if you have not ever been out of a relationship, maybe it's time that you do get out of that relationship and solely in a relationship with Jesus Christ. You might have heard it, you date Jesus Christ, and you draw closer to him. This one is kind of tied to that as well, but godly dating focus. Most people are focused on what is out there in finding a person rather than what's in here. If you're single, focus not on what's out there, focus on what's here. There's a principle that I believe takes place is that when we become and give more effort to become the people that God wants us to be in here, where's our heart at? Where's our walk at? Then what God has to do is he has to find the right person for you. And the farther you are in your walks, ladies, especially you, God's got to find a man who's able to lead you. So if you're less mature, he'll find a man that's less mature, in my opinion. I recommend, ladies, that you go on fire for the Lord and you seek him out with all of your heart, and then God's going to match you with a man who's got to be able to lead you. That's his job. It's not your job. That's his job to bring people together. Here's some advice. Be the right person rather than look for the right person. That's a good, solid piece of advice. So, again, we want to set our sights on the Lord, and then God will bring someone who has to keep in step with us, keep in touch, and walk with us. And also, if your focus is off of the Lord while you're dating, then you know, and if that person's contributing to it, you know that that person is not somebody you should be with. Are you guys with me? We're going to get into more of this later because we'll talk about how the relationship should bring life. The person you're dating, because we're going from dating to courting, right? So you married people, you have to think about this. How can you apply this to your marriage? How can you date? How can you court your spouse? That's a good thing to do. But single people, you need to have this as a good guideline for you. And if the relationship's not bringing life to you, if it's not causing you to be drawn into the Lord more and more, then there's something wrong with it. That's true for a married couple as well. So now let's look at courtship. Chapter 2, verse 7, there's a shift that's taking place between chapter 2, verse 7, which we read the last part of, and verse 8. The relationship is now going to become very intentional and very deliberate. It's a time of clarity. They're going from dating to courting. It's intentional, it's deliberate, and it's clearer. Things are going to be more clearer. In verse 8, she anticipates her man is coming to pick her up, and she says, and look what she says here in verses 8 and 9. She says, "The voice of my beloved. Behold, he comes leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall. He is looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice." I want you to understand the context of what's going on here. She has been not in an inappropriate way. She has just been expressing, "I want to be with you. I'm being drawn into this relationship. I think the world of you." And Solomon, in his wisdom, in his God-fearing attitude, he said, "Listen, don't awaken love until it pleases. Don't stir it up. Just wait. Wait, there's a time. There's a context for this." Guys, I want this to be infused in the men. I wish I would have known this when I was single. Oh, gosh, this is gold for men. You know what? You know what I want from my wife? I want her to respect me. I want her to desire me too. But do you know, men, that desire is driven by respect? If she doesn't respect me, and I've given her reasons not to, If she doesn't respect me, then there's not going to be that desire, that attraction, that drawing in, that intimacy. All of those things are hinged on trust. And so as we come to this book, for me, I'm like, man, this is gold. This is so good. He rightfully, firmly led this woman and said, wait, what you feel is good. It's love that you feel. He didn't chastise her. He didn't belittle her. He treated her with respect and honor and dignity. And I said, wait a second, just wait. She's thinking about him. She's anticipating him coming to pick her up in these verses. This is the first phase of courtship, and that is desiring to be with one another. Now listen, we're going to go into verses 10 through 13. As we go into these verses, I want you to answer this question. As we read through verses 10 through 13, what season of the year is being talked about? Remember, this is still poetry. This is a man who is a poet, Solomon, who's writing this. And so in verses 10 through 13, it says, my beloved spoke and said to me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vine with the tender grapes give a good smell. That rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. The time of the year that is being spoken of here is spring. And it's a poetic way of saying that it's new life that's here, that love is in the air. Don't you get that kind of a feeling? Does it feel like summer? Is it supposed to be in the high 70s today? It doesn't feel like winter right now, does it? We're supposed to have a springtime. What's the number one flower that everybody gets excited about here in Texas? The bluebonnets, right? And people stop on the sides of the freeways and take pictures. It's crazy, right? But there's new life that's being brought forth. That's what they're talking about here. I feel like there's just new life being breathed into me. I'm so excited. This season of my life, this time of our relationship, it's so great. They're really enjoying themselves. There's health, there's excitement, and there's not fighting taking place. Church, this is the second phase of courtship. It's where there's an increase in godly life, great growth. Things are coming to life. The relationship is going someplace. It's deepening. It's intentionally, deliberately growing. Now, I don't want you to miss some of the things that are being said here because it builds on itself. Remember, this is a bantering. This is a communication. They're talking. And so she's expressing herself in this way. Listen, she is beginning to get vulnerable. She's putting her feelings out there. With almost any relationship, some people, maybe they don't have a care in the world, but most people, when you start opening your heart and you say how you feel, in a dating context, you put yourself out there. It's a courageous act. And then what happens is very, very critical. That person either reciprocates it or rejects it. Oh, the rejection is so painful. But when it's received and it's reciprocated, it's good. Folks, this is possibly the most vulnerable this woman has felt up to this point. We're going to see her feel more vulnerable. In any relationship, you have to make yourself vulnerable. But she's making herself vulnerable. She's putting it out there. I'm into you. I'm drawn to you. It's like a new life coming. You're it. You have solely brought me like a new life. Gentlemen, we need to discern this and we need to respond appropriately. And because of the clear intentions of this woman, he responds that way. She's made herself, she's expressed herself up to this point, and it's critical that the man responds and reacts to this vulnerability. Men, take notes. Women, look for this type of a man. What's happening is this woman is giving her heart to this man. She's giving her all to this man. When a woman gives her heart like this and she's really falling for a man, it's an incredibly vulnerable spot. And if the feelings aren't reciprocated, then she's saying, I'm falling more and more. She's there. She's out there. She's feeling a little bit nervous. Because of this vulnerability, the woman's trying to guard her heart, and she begins to hide. That's what we're going to see. Look at, she's beginning to hide. In verse 14, listen to how the man responds. Listen to how he calls her out. She's feeling vulnerable. Look at this man. Guys, this is what we do. Take notes, guys. This is golden. What do you do when a woman feels like she's vulnerable? She just went out there. She made a step. She said she likes you. She's into you. It's like new life for her. She starts to hide a little bit. I feel like I'm a little bit vulnerable. She's guarding herself. And the man says in verse 14, "Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely." Why is she hiding? She's afraid. She's frightened. She's concerned. What is the concern all about? Listen, folks, listen to this. This guy that she is dating, she's afraid that he's going to change at some point. He's been doing everything right. We've seen movies like that, haven't we? We've seen how the guy, he's just perfect, and then he gets to a certain point and he just switches. Either he gets what he wants or he's done, and the relationship, she's afraid. This guy has just been so perfect. Guys, listen, this is very common for ladies. It's common because she sees the guy as being creative and romantic and taking the initiative and showing interest in her. And then when marriage comes, she's afraid that he's going to get pretty wrapped up into sports or into other interests. The guy no longer, she's afraid he's no longer going to be interested in me. She's giving her all. When you give your all and somebody then just backs out, it's painful. She realizes she's falling for him and she's willing to give herself entirely to him, and she's afraid that after he conquers this goal, this conquest, that he's going to be backing out. Men, this is justified. This is justified reasoning. You know why? Because men, we're like hunters. There's something in us where we go out and we hunt, we go, we gather, we go, we collect. We bring back, we proudly bring back things. You know what? I love to make Monica like, "I'm so proud of you. I'll bring back stuff." It doesn't matter what it is. If I'm gathering, collecting, and I'm hunting, and I bring it back, I feel great about it. But it's oftentimes we lose interest after we've conquered. So, men, we got to be aware of this. When we had our fire on Friday night, I like to get the fire started. I like to take the initiative. I like to get everything going. And then I like to ask Monica to help out. She watches the fire. She maintains the fire. And then you know what I do? We were at a pond and there were some banks and some trees and fallen branches. And so I went and I gathered and I collected twigs and branches. And then I came back. And as the man in my cowboy boots and my beard in my jeans, I broke these twigs and broke these branches to firewood size pieces. And I was walking down the little driveway sort of area. It wasn't like a driveway, but it was like a dirt road. And I was walking down, dragging these branches and dropping them there. And, you know, I was being the man. I was conquering. I was climbing up the mountain. And I was breaking off these trees. And boom. And then she was like, she tried breaking these things. Monica's usually pretty strong, but she's like, she probably was doing that for my benefit. And I'm like, "You want me to do it, honey?" So I grab it and crack. Here you go. "You want another one? Here." Crack. That's my job. I'm the man, right? And she, you know what? That's right. Thank you. Thank you, Foster. But with both of us focused, with both of us giving that needed effort, the fire was continuing to grow. And we were maintaining it. And it was providing warmth. It was a blessing for us. Went out with my flashlight. Did my job. It's a good example of what a married couple needs to do to maintain the fire of romance and passion in their relationship, because both are making an effort. This is the third phase of the courtship, and that is discovery, bringing her out, protecting her in that discovery, being the man in that situation. Ephesians 5, 25 through 27. Don't turn there, but listen to what the husbands are supposed to be doing. It says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify her, that he might cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word, presenting the word of God, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Gentlemen, as the woman, as the lady shares more of her hurts and her wounds, as she shares more of her past in this discovery time, it should cause an intense feeling of becoming and being even more protective of her and for her. There should be something inside of us where we say, I want to protect you. In all of these phases, I always want to encourage it. The feedback, ladies, if you don't know this, you say something good about us and we rise. Yeah, that's right. That firewood was good. That's right. I broke it in just the right spot. I don't know how I do it. I just put it right in front of my knee and crack. And I'm very good at that. Yes, that was a good fire. Yes. But we did it together, honey. Remember, one of my love languages is words of affirmation. So I'm like, that's right. You're right. That was a great fire. It's an awesome fire. Listen to what she says in verse 15. You see this going back and forth. Listen, do you see it getting deeper? Listen to what she says in verse 15 here. Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Notice that this is a goal of the couple here. Catch the foxes. The foxes will spoil the vines. Now listen, you might be asking yourself, what are the foxes? What are they talking about here? The foxes would go into the vineyards and they would eat the little buds before the grapes would be created. So in the beginning stages of the grapes being formed, these foxes would go in and eat them and they would spoil the vines. And so foxes destroy the vineyard. Anything that destroys our relationships, church, are little foxes. Are you with me? Let me say it again so you don't miss this. Anything that destroys our vineyard, our relationship, are considered to be little foxes. What she is doing is she is saying, listen, I want you to be paying attention to this. There are little foxes out there. Before we go any further, listen, let's not forget that previously here in this book, the vineyard's been a reference to her body. Why not have premarital sex? Because it destroys the vineyard. There's a time and a place, and it's a blessed thing when a married couple comes together. She says, our vines have tender grapes. The woman is sharing that there is still a delicacy and vulnerability to the relationship. And the woman's asking for a commitment from this man that he's willing to work at the relationship. She's saying, this is what I need from you. I need a commitment. I need a commitment that you're going to be aware of the little foxes and that we're going to work together to preserve and to protect our relationship. Gentlemen, are you willing to work at the relationship that you're in? If so, then make sure that she knows this. Make sure you express that. Listen, there's a little fox. I'm going to deal with it. If not, maybe you should, well, this is for dating. If you're dating and you don't want this type of relationship, maybe you should consider breaking up. Men, if you want the simple life, stay single. But if you want to be married, plan on being involved. Men, plan on knowing and understanding that marriage is a commitment with one another. As we go through these, I don't know about you, men, but I'm incredibly challenged. And the Holy Spirit says, Robert, you could probably do a better job on that. That's a gentle way that the Lord would say, you definitely need to be better about this, Robert. Take better care of Monica. Make sure that the little foxes that hurt her heart are dealt with. And you know what? I'm a hunter. So as a hunter and as a shepherd, I go out and you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to kill the foxes. I'm going to destroy them before they destroy us. That's my job. Are you guys with me? That's translated into my life. And I don't know how it works out for you, but it is both parties working together. But as a man, that's the way I feel. Okay. Where's that little fox? I'm going to destroy that. And I know it sounds like really abusive and harsh, but are you guys with me? Like, we need to have that sort of an attitude. I'm going to kill it because it's going to kill me and kill my wife, kill our marriage. We're one, right? Folks, now, listen, we know that this man, at this response from her, he must have said something. Something that he said she really, really liked. And the reason why I say that, and we're reading literally between the lines, between 15 and 16 and 17, we're reading between the lines because listen to how she responds in saying we need to catch these little foxes. We need to make sure that we ruin them before they ruin us. And listen to how she responds to him in verses 16 and 17. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies. Listen. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether. I'm going to give you some insight to this verse. Her response, I'm going to give you some insight to. I want you to understand this, and we're taking it in the context of the relationship. Guys, pay close attention. Women, pay close attention. Guys, do the right thing. It will benefit you in the long run. She says to him, we're connected. My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies. This is a good stand-up guy. And then she says, listen to this, verse 16. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee away. So she's talking about an overnight period of time. Are you guys with me? Your mind should start clicking in just a minute. Turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag. These gazelles and young stags in this period of time were ancient pagan fertility symbols. So it would be something that would be understood. She's saying, listen, there's something sexual. In other words, listen, and in our vernacular, when I was in high school, I remember this is the first time I ever heard this, but she's saying, I want you to be my stud. Are you with me? I think that's a pretty good translation. I want you to be my stud. And then she says something really, really clear. I don't have this yet underlined in my Bible. I will at some point. I just haven't taken the time yet. But do you see where it says the mountains of Bether? Do you see that? Be a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether. The mountains of Bether, you can take a map of Israel. You can take a map of the world and you're never going to find the mountains of Bether because they don't exist. The mountains of Bether do not refer to a geographic place. So what is she talking about? What is she saying to this man? She is saying, based on the way that you responded to my vulnerability, will you be a stud all night for me on the mountains of Bether? She's asking him, would you take care of me intimately in a sexual way, in the same way that you take care of me intimately in an emotional way? This is getting really deep. Are you guys with me? Guys, this is unlocking the keys to their hearts. You protect her and she feels safe. You know what happens when the woman feels safe? They open up even more. She's saying, the way that you're responding, I feel safe with you. My emotions are safe. I want to give even more of you, more of myself to you. Gentlemen, do you see the proper way and the godly way to be intimate with your spouse? By the way, in case you didn't pick up on this, the mountains of Bether, it's literally the mountains of separation. It's talking about her breasts. And she's saying, can you be a young stud on my breast? That's a good, solid translation. She's saying, I'm inviting you to be here. Guys, listen, I'm going to say this at least twice because it's worth saying over and over. You probably are going to want to go online tonight or tomorrow and get this study because it's so good. Guys, listen to this. This is gold. This is another one of those golden nuggets. You don't start with their body, guys. You don't start with their bodies. You minister to their minds. You minister to their emotions. Then you minister to their heart. Guys, don't start with a woman's body. Minister to her mind and then minister to her emotions and then finally minister to her heart. And you will see women just open up at the right time, at the right place, in the right context. Guys, do you see this? Now, 3:1, we're going to go through verse 5, chapter 3, verse 1 through chapter 3, verse 5. We're going to go through quickly, but she's now taking this man to meet her mom, and the relationship is moving along, and we're going to see that he will honor the Lord once again. They've definitely got it heated up. Things have gotten heated up between this man and this woman. It's natural. And as we've been studying, the passionate fire needs to be in the right place. And so God has designed this place to be the marriage. Now, before we go into this discussion too much further, I want to ask you some questions for courtship. This kind of heat can be handled properly, but I want to show you that there's some steps that can be taken. So ladies, let me ask you three questions to consider before you begin courting. One, are you ready? Are you ready to do this? Are you ready to follow God's guidebook here? Guys, if you can't do chapter 2, verse 7, and chapter 3, verse 5, which we're going to get to in just a minute, then you're not ready. You may have good feelings, and it may be a good idea, but not yet. Let me read chapter 3, verses 1 through 5, and we'll come back and keep asking these questions, ladies. Are you ready? Verse 1. By night on my bed, I sought the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. I will rise now, I said, and I will go about the city, in the streets, and in the squares. I will seek the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. The watchmen who go about the city found me. I said, have you seen the one that I love? Scarcely had I passed by them when I found the one that I love. I held him and would not let him go until I had brought him to the house of my mother and into the chamber of her who conceived me. You guys understand, I want you to come to my mother's bed. I want you to meet my family. And you know what that means, guys. And I want you to be intimate with me. And he says to her in verse 5, guys, you have to be willing to be mature enough and to lead in this way. He says, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up nor awaken love until it pleases. He says the same thing. Listen, this is love. This is good love. But listen, there's a boundary for it. And we need to adhere to it. Are you the right type of person, lady? We're still on the first question. Are you the right type of person? Do you have a track record of godliness? Are you mature enough to handle the weight of responsibility regarding this person's heart? If you're not, then stay in boot camp for a while. Keep learning and keep growing in the Lord. The second question, have you watched this person over time? Ladies, have you watched this person over time? Do you really know who they are? Or is what you know about them just like a thin slice? Is it just real thin, not real deep? Remember in Genesis, Abraham sent his servant Eliezer to go to the well, and you know what he did? He watched. It's a really, really good example. He watched. I'm looking for a bride, because he was the father. It's a type of the father sent the Eliezer, is a type of the spirit, to go find a bride for his son. So Eliezer sat and he watched the character, he watched the work ethic of Rebecca. And when he saw that one, he said, this is the one, because he had watched her for a while. Ladies, the third question, or series of questions, is this relationship life-giving? Do you know how critical this is? Because sometimes women get so blind in love. And you miss this critical question, is it life-giving? Is being in a relationship with this person making you a better person? Does being around this person, this man, does it draw out godly growth for you? Or is this relationship forced as an act of your will? Does he make you laugh? Do you enjoy spending time with him? If the answers are no to those, you know what? You should be in a different relationship or no relationship at all. Men, let's look at some questions for you. I've got five questions for you. The key to courtship is being intentional and deliberate in your efforts. One, you take the initiative, and I love this. Gosh, this is such good stuff. What we see being drawn out, these principles for men, I wish I would have known. Take the initiative, make your intentions known. You know what? As I read through these, you know what? I'll tell you what I see. I see this world saying, you got to go up and you got to be smooth. You know what I love about the movies now on DVD is they show a blooper reel. So these people who are so polished and going in, they're just like, you know, the Matthew McConaughey, how y'all doing? You know, that's not a good rendition of him, but he's so smooth. Well, you know what? He's got a blooper reel too. Because these people are human beings. They make errors. They blow it, just like us. But we don't see that. So we think we got to pull it all together and come across. Listen, guys, this is so safe for you too. You have to take a step of faith. You have to take a step a little bit. But you know what you do? Is you make your intentions known. With the clear intention, you express your desire to cultivate a friendship. Hey, I like you. I'd like to be friends with you a little bit more. I'd like to talk a little bit more. You say to the lady, are you interested? If she's not interested, she tells you. And you know what? You know how safe that is? Hey, I just want to be better friends. Are you interested? Yeah, I'm interested. Okay, good. And you keep going. You get a feel for things, okay? If it's not happening, you usually can tell. And if it is, you're like, okay, this is good. By taking the initiative, man, it allows the woman to guard her heart and at the same time make a decision to proceed in the process of getting to know you and proceeding in the relationship more. It's not an emotional stroke that we're to look for, men. Just simply a confirmation that this is something that she's interested in. The second thing, ask for exclusivity. Ask to be exclusive. You go to the lady and you say, hey, I'd like to be friends. Are you interested? Yes, you're interested. You keep going a little bit and you say, listen, I'm feeling some things towards you where I'd like it to be a little bit more. What I'd like to do is say that we're only going to be like friends in this way. We're moving forward and it's just going to be the two of us. Is that something that you're interested in? Guys, before you make this move, some good advice is to go visit a spiritual authority in our life, a dad, a pastor, a youth pastor, a spiritual authority, and ask them, is there anything that you see in me that would disqualify me from pursuing this relationship? And is there anything in her at this period of time that's not the right timing for her? It's wise to make these steps because it protects you and it protects her. You know what? Listen, I can tell you as a father of three daughters that if a guy came to me and asked, is she ready, and yielded to me as an authority in this relationship, I would respect him a lot. And you know what I would say to him? When he's ready to make the move, if I said, listen, it's not a good time. Samantha's not ready yet. Just wait. And if he stayed, I I'm going to be watching the guy. I'll watch him like a hawk. And if I see something in him, then I'm going to talk with him. Hey, listen, if you're still interested, you know, even if you're not, listen, man to man, here's what you should be doing, and kind of guide him along. But when the time's right, then I've got that authority, and I know that this is a man who knows how to yield to authority. He'll submit, and he'll be right to take the relationship to the next level. Number three, you have a boundaries conversation. In this arena of courtship, you have a boundaries conversation. It needs to be the man who is initiating this conversation, and he's saying, listen, where are our comfort levels for our relationship and what we should be doing? In other words, should we kiss? Should we hold hands? Do you know you can go right into marriage and never kiss the woman until the day of the ceremony, and it could be incredibly intense and passionate. But you have that conversation. A lot of times kissing goes on to something else. Many people ask the question, and you guys know this, is how far can we go? But the better question would be, how godly can we become in this relationship? You hear the difference? Not how far can we go, but how godly can this be? Then the fourth thing is disclosure. Once the relationship has progressed to the point of trust, there needs to be some disclosure. Some of the baggage needs to come out. This is a scary time, so you have to understand trust must be there. A few cautions. First, I would say that you need to forecast this early in the relationship. Listen, at some point, if we continue to move and progress together, we're going to have a talk about disclosure. And I'm going to talk about some things that I've dealt with in life. And you open up and you say, listen, I've got some baggage I'm dealing with, and I need you to know about that. Second thing is you make sure that the trust is established first. You don't share too soon. You don't share too late. Thirdly, the other person does not need to know all the details. Are you with me? And if you've been married for any length of time and you ask for some details, listen, that could be horrifying and that could be damaging and hurtful. Sometimes the topics can give a visual image that does not need to be in the other person's mind. Guys, sometimes we're numbers oriented. That doesn't need to be shared. Do you guys see how this? Well, let me see. How many have I? You can gloss over. When we do counseling, if there's any sort of sexual discussion about, I ask that we talk about things like we from a high level, not the details. I don't need that. I have enough problems as a man on this earth visualizing. We're pretty clear about these things here in this church. If you didn't know that, we throw it all out there, not to defile the pulpit, but to be honest. I don't need any more details. And I think we need to have that wisdom to know it doesn't need to go quite that far. It just needs to be a high level. A good question to ask is, this goes right into marriage, if you didn't know this. What happens if something's going on in your marriage? You have to ask this question: will giving these details be beneficial for this relationship? And so you always filter the content through the filter of building trust rather than creating insecurity. Another helpful tip is this: you can say, and it's fair to say to the other person, if they begin asking questions, that you ask them this question: I'll share any information that you ask. And there should be that freedom and that latitude to say, I'll share whatever you want, but will this information be beneficial for our relationship? There should be nothing hidden, but we let the past be in the past. I'm a different person than I was 20 years ago. Man, there's depth of communication taking place, and so we want to make sure that we understand this is the man that our wives have fallen in love with. There's levels of communication. The first level is cliche. The second level is sharing of information. The third level is feelings. I want to share this, ladies, because as we share and we open up as men, I want you to understand there's vulnerability points for us too. Ladies, pay attention to this, please. On behalf of the men, I'm asking you to do this. When we open up about what scares us, how we feel, we share our passions, we open up about our goals, we express past hurts, we talk about temptations, we feel extremely vulnerable, just like the women do. There's different points. Ladies, as we're reading, you see that the man is responding by helping the woman through this vulnerability, by making her feel safe and protected. So too can the woman make a man feel safe and protected. I'm just telling you this right now. If I don't have it safe, I'm not going to share. Ladies, reassure us, sympathize with us, protect us. As we're looking at this book, it's two people that are working together for a common goal. I just told Monica that part of our conversation on Friday night, maybe it was Saturday morning. We had two fires. We had a fire Saturday morning too. But I think it was Friday night. But I talked to her and I said, listen, I feel vulnerable. And what I want to do is I want to kind of close up. Ladies, a lot of things that we deal with as men are kind of shameful. It's embarrassing. And we don't want to open up about those things. And so when we're able to open up and say there's been struggles, you know, you guys can put two and two together. If you've been here long enough or if you're intuitive, you know what I'm talking about. It's shameful. And so we need our wives to come alongside us and say, listen, I'm praying for you. I love you and I care about you. And I understand this is a genuine struggle that you have, just like I have my own struggles. And the levels of communication deepen. Ladies, listen to this illustration. When God created woman, he created her from man, Adam. And where did he create her from? This is a wedding message, you know? From the rib. What does the rib protect? My heart. It's this incredible structure that God has placed around the heart. And he says, listen, wives, you need to be like a rib. I need Monica to be a rib for me. So if there's a blow to my heart, she's going to take a little bit of it. I take it for her. She needs to take it for me. That's the way we work together. And we function together as one. Ladies, I don't think that you realize, and maybe you do, but I don't think you realize just how much protection you can provide for us. Protect us, validate us, pray for us. Let us know that we're not weird. Because that's the way we feel. Because we're not like you. Before we move on, ladies, I want to share the absolute importance here. If a man doesn't feel safe, he's not going to make himself any more vulnerable. So ladies, we will never, listen, I know it's absolute, so be careful when you're talking absolutes. So take it in context. We won't open up about our greatest struggles if we don't feel safe. That was the fourth thing. The fifth thing is discuss marriage. When things continue and they progress to a point in the relationship, and it's the next step is being married, then the man needs to talk to the woman and say, I'm ready to make this next step. And he needs to say, are you comfortable with me going and talking with your dad or your mom, your spiritual authority? Are you ready for that? Are you comfortable with that? And if she's okay with that, he's, again, being deliberate. He's being intentional. Here's my plans. Here's what I want to do. Then the next steps, being very intentional, very methodical, the man leading. And guys, what a high bar this sets for us. But do you know it's the right bar to strive for? For the singles out there, listen to this quote. I don't even know who said it. The only thing worse than being single and wanting to be married is being married and wanting to be single. And it is torturous. You're locked in. And the way we look at it, the way we see the scripture say, you get married and it you're done. You're in. It's for life. Now listen, at some point I'm going to have a talk on divorce. Through this study, I'm going to have a talk on divorce because I think there are people that go through divorces. And I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing them or anything because sometimes it happens. We'll get to that, okay? But I have to stay to the context of where we're at. What if you're far into a relationship or even married and you haven't done these things yet? Remember, our God is a savior of grace. Ask for forgiveness, repent, get back on track, restore the relationship in the right way. I'm not perfect. And just over the weekend, I was telling Monica, you know what? I feel like I need to be more deliberate, more intentional. I feel like I need to go out and catch the little foxes. And I told her, I said, listen, I'm taking a page out of Solomon's playbook here, you know? So, although it might not completely be original in thought, it is biblical. But we can go back and we can follow these things, and God wants to redeem us and he wants to make it good. The last thing I'm going to leave you with today is verse 5. I know we read this, but listen, he says, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. It's the second time this guy has led spiritually and sexually, and he stopped the relationship from moving forward to a place that it's not ready for. I really respect that because that takes a lot of dedication, a lot of love for the Lord. And so this guy's done a good job of that. Let's pray.